I do have a question, but it's quite specific, and I was actually hoping that I could ask it like later on down the track, because I'm a worker and I've just started a job in the city, and one of the things that I've been thinking about is how to partner with other Christians with working in the city. And so one of the opportunities that are available is Campus Bible Study. Oh, sorry, no, City Bible Forum, sorry. And
you're in the city now, you're not at uni.
No, I'm not at uni anymore. So I just wanted, especially for Stuart, I'm guessing you practiced law before. Were you working in the city, or I'm sure you've come at least in contact with CBF. Mm. So I just wanted to know, you know, what are your thoughts about that, about the ministry itself and para-ministries?
Mm. Yeah, I think it's a great thing to be involved in. I worked in the city for about a year and a half. I'd worked in country New South Wales before that. But when I was working in Elizabeth Street, I was involved in a church. I was an elder in a congregation, ran a Bible study, did all sorts of church stuff. But when I was at work, it was you're at work for a long time during the week. And lunchtimes, it seemed to me, were a really good chance for me to be able to meet with other Christians. In those days, City Bible Forum hadn't been thought of either. But there were, you know, John Chapman was teaching in St Andrew's Cathedral. If you remember John Chapman, Philip Jensen used to go in those days. So rolling around during the week, and usually I'd try and pick one lunchtime when I would, during each week, when I would try and get along to one of them. Couldn't always be the same day, but they had them over a few different days. So I think they're a terrific way of just staying focused. It's really, I don't know whether, I suspect a lot of it is blokes. You can be very single-minded and become very tunnel vision. So you get to work and that's all you think about. And so having a, in the middle of the week, a lunchtime, where you just, your head's up out of that and you actually go in here and you're reminded again of the things you know are true and of why you're at work and of why you exist and of who you are as a child of God. All of that is just a wonderful bringing back, if you've strayed away, just bringing you back into focus with what everything is about, including your job. So I think I found that enormously helpful, even in the context of being busy outside of work in a whole range of church things. Found that really helpful. And I think City Bible Forum's a terrific thing for doing that. The other area where I think it's useful is that if you want to be as I'm sure you do, a witness for Christ at work, it's one thing to be able to talk to people about your faith, to be able to give them books or whatever, but to be able to say to someone at work, why don't you come along with me and listen to whoever, or why don't you come along with me to this breakfast? I'll meet you for breakfast here and listen to this speaker, is just another way of being able to be active as a witness for Christ. So I found that really helpful. I had a secretary who was a Christian but married to a very, very unsympathetic to Christ person. And so I would often go with her to a church service in the middle of the city because it was a way of encouraging her, because she wasn't allowed to go to church on a Sunday. So there were people that I worked with that you can invite along to breakfast or to lunchtime. So both those levels, I think it works really well. I think it's a great thing to get involved in.
Well, can I just add a note to that? That I found a very encouraging time was 7:30 to 8, one day a week I used to meet with about five other Christian guys in defence. And we would just pray for, read the Bible for 15 minutes and then pray for 15 minutes. It was fantastic. And it didn't take long. And we just met in a little room and we invited others to come along. It was great. And, you know, that's an easy thing to do.
David, just in the context of your work, I know in the army it would be people are generally on the same side and they're working together, but given that conflict is kind of inherent to the job, do you have any thoughts or tips as to how you have dealt with conflict with non-Christians in a godly way?
Well, Look, probably not always well, is the short answer. Look, I think, I hope I'm understanding your question right. You're not talking about any just within the army, within a workplace that's a bit high pressured. How do you deal with things when there can inevitably conflict? Well, firstly, I don't know what your view of the army is. I met a guy at college the other day who said, I guess this must be a real change for you, not yelling at people all the time. What movies have you been watching, you know? It's not like that. Actually, you know, if people were like that, you'd just say, I can't stand it. People are very normal and professional. A lot of them are very relaxed. If they're not, it's very hard to work with them. But, you know, whenever you're in a workplace, I don't think it's whether it's the army or perhaps the place you're with, there's always going to be friction. There's always going to be conflict. So I just think you have to handle it, you know, by being gracious, by being humble, be slow to anger, be quick to help out, show yourself to be a servant in the team, ready to help. You know, be professional. Do the best you can with the time you have and the resources you have. You know, I think you are representing Christ. You're not perfect. People will see that, but you do need to do your very best to be a good ambassador for Him. And, you know, I think one thing I hope this is sticking to topic, but I often found it hard to know how am I going to make a difference in this workplace. And I feel the answer to me was you need to find a place to serve. There will always be someone who just wants to chat, or who you find their daughter's disabled, or that they've got problems, or they've had a marriage go bust. And you don't have to be a counsellor, you don't have to be anything you're not, but naturally just, you know, be a friend. And that hopefully will lead to something bigger, but, you know, just be a friend. Just serve them, do what you can, pray about opportunities, you never know what's going to happen. And I suppose where we can be seen at our worst sometimes is in conflict. I don't know if I can add to the conflict comment anymore, but to say be humble. Be ready to say sorry if you're at fault. Try and work well with other people. Be professional.
So, David, I was struck by what you said about your bosses telling you that, you know, you had no choice but to work even harder and sacrifice if you wanted to get promoted. So I'm quite interested in the work-life balance sort of thing. And it seems like to me, like once you want to reach a higher stage of in an organization, you have to put in those hours. And so to what extent can we, you know, say that if I'm in a higher position, I'm able to use my Christian influence, you know, for the better of the workplace, my colleagues or whatever, against the fact that this is my family will be sacrificed, my church life will be sacrificed. So is it only going to be like a very select few, you know, exceptional people who's able to balance that? And, you know, are we kidding ourselves if we say that we can do that? So, like, how can we make that decision?
Oh, I think Stuart will probably have something to say about this, as he was a lawyer, a gun lawyer, weren't you, Stuart? Don't you log everything every 6 minutes, give account for your time? Anyway.
You've got no idea what this interview is costing the church.
Eugene was talking about this today, life-work balance. I think that's a great thing to try and do. And, you know, in the army, they really push that. They say, if you're not busy, go home, have a rest. People would work terrible hours there sometimes, especially when there was an operational issue at stake. A media issue had come up. It was really hard work. People would arrive early, leave late. And what do you do about that? Because I've met some fantastic role models who are Christians. There's a guy called Jim Wallace. You might have heard of Jim Wallace. He was CEO of the SAS. Got out. He's doing other things now. But, you know, you don't get to be the CEO of the SAS by just doing sort of 8 to 5. And you don't get to be the chief of the Defence Force either. And the current chief of the Defence Force, David Hurley, he's actually a Christian guy. So, you know, there are going to be times where you have to do these things, where you have to spend time away. You could have to go on deployment for a year. That's the job. It's very hard to find a rule that you can follow. I think committing it to prayer, thinking about where your heart is good, because you might be at work 40 or 50 hours a week. Your heart can't be there, though, can it? You know, I mean, you've got to put your head to it. You've got to be motivated. You've got to be into it. But that's not your first love. Your first love's got to be the Lord, and it might be that He's got you there for a purpose, and you do have to do some hard yards at work, and you are talented, and that's where you should be going on the up. I don't have a really good answer, I don't think, beyond that. I don't know if you do, Stuart, seeing that as a lawyer.
Oh, I think it's a tough call, and it's hard for anybody to tell somebody else what they ought to be doing in that situation. But I think that principles are the way in which we need to live by principles rather than pragmatics. And what often happens is that we get driven by the pragmatics of, I got a lot of pressure if I want to get this promotion. My boss is on my back. It's embarrassing to walk out early when everyone else is staying late. All of that sort of stuff. Rather than choosing to live a life which is governed by the things that I know are true. And you can only arrive at those principles outside of that pressure, I think. It's very hard to think them up on the spur of the moment. So I think it's important for Christian men to be thinking and talking to their pastors about it. If they're married, talking to their wives about it. But thinking about the principles by which they want to live their life. Now, I think, coming out of David's talk tonight, it's there throughout the Scriptures, that why is it that we exist? Why has God given us any breath to draw? It's because we are called by Christ to live a life which will most effectively serve Him. Now, that's the way that we want to live. Whatever we end up doing, whether in the ADF or law or pastoral ministry, that's the way that we want to live. So it's working out the principles and then thinking about, okay, what does this principle look like in this situation? So if I know that I want to be most effective for Jesus as a Christian lawyer, let's say, then when the push comes to work long hours because that's the way that I'll get promotion, for example, I've got to say, is this going to be most effective for honouring the name of Christ in the short term and in the long term? Is it going to make me a more effective husband, more effective father, and more effective in my church, more effective in my workplace, a person of influence? All of those factors I have to consider. But the principle is, how can I be most effective for lifting up the name of Jesus and honouring Him? And if your heart's anything like mine, you're very good at tricking yourself. And I know that, ambition, it's an incredibly powerful thing in all of us, I think, and especially I suspect more in blokes than it is in women, but it is a very powerful thing. So we've got to be checking to make sure that I'm not just saying this is what's most effective, but it actually is what's the most effective for Christ. Now, for one person that might take you one direction, for one person it will take you another direction, but you've got to live by principles, I think, not by pragmatics.
Given the topic is the challenge men face, I just wanted to ask as an open question, what do you think is the challenge men face this day and age, generally speaking, from the how you look after the people that you look after and your respective industries that you have come from?
The challenge. That's a difficult question. I'm not sure that I can necessarily narrow down on one. I think something that is common to men is that we want to be significant. We want to have significance. And the great danger that we face is that we try to find that significance in the wrong place. That we look for it in terms of our workplace, I think, is an easy place to think. If I can, climb to this level, if I can get the right job, if I can impress this boss or whatever, then that's going to give me the sort of significance that makes me feel worthwhile. That's a common temptation, I think, for most men, but we look for it in other places too, the sort of people we want to, be hanging out with. Maybe sometimes you can even seek to find your significance by being the best husband or father. Now, it's good to be a good husband or father, but ultimately we need to find our significance in Christ. We need to see that He's the one who values us, and we need to find our value in that, because unless we're resting in Christ, whose love for us is unchanging, then we're going to be tempted to depend on something else, and everything else is rocky. Everything else can fail and let us down. So I think that's probably a consistent thing that men face, is looking for something to build you up and you know, cuddle your ego and whatever it is, rather than looking for that significance in Christ. That's probably the most immediate thing that springs to mind. But I think we face challenges in lots of different parts of life. It's about knowing how to use the gifts and skills that God has given us, not for our own glory, but for His. Yeah. I don't know. You want to add to that?
For me, I think it's not being tripped up. Thinking and swapping the good things for the very best thing. And, you know, as I was saying tonight, John 3:16, that's the best. It doesn't get better than that. And yet we sometimes think that that's okay, ho-hum. But we really need to be convinced about that. We really need to live our lives by that, because it's very easy just to fall back into the groove and get on with life like everyone else and to virtually be no different to anyone else. So don't trade up the best for just good things. The best is what it's all about. Jesus is what it's all about.
I think the thing that I'd probably add to both of those, which I think are great, is that the very character of the God who we worship is that He is a personal God who seeks out relationship with us. And so if we are being remade into the image of Christ, then we have to ask ourselves, what is it that lies at the very heart of why I'm on this planet and who I am as a child of God? And the answer is, I think, that I am therefore made for a relationship. So therefore, I have to think about how my life, what's all the different aspects that make up my life, how that reflects the priority of relationships, my relationship with God and then my relationship with others. One of the things that struck me as Eugene's talked to the team about Grace Point has been the way in which it's focused on relationships with God, relationships within the church, relationships within the community. It's that focus, I think, is a reflection of the character of God, and it ought to be, again, the principle that gives shape to the way in which we order and arrange our life. When I was about 23, working in my first job, a close friend of ours, my wife and I, who was our age, died. She was pregnant with their second child and just laid down on the bed and just died. At that point, I had never had anyone close to me die, and it just really rattled my cage. As my wife Pauline and I thought through what are the implications, what does that mean for life, the thing that came back to us over and over again is that in the end, nothing matters except relationships. It's our relationship with God, which lies at the very centre, and out of that relationship, relationship with others. Now, for all of us, we've got this complex web of relationships, but it's easy, I think, as blokes to become far more functional, far more task-oriented, and to put relationships on the back burner and to give ourselves over instead to what is easier for us often, that is task and function. But I think it's working out, keep doing the task, keep doing the functions, but how do I actually maintain a godly priority on relationships even while I'm doing that and in the context of doing that? That's a really big challenge, but I think it's worth the effort.
Sorry, I got a question myself. My brother's in the Defence Force. He's a non-Christian. So I was just wondering, in your time in the Defence Force, what sort of complications with evangelism did you have, and difficulties with sharing the gospel with people in the military?
Actually, I think there's a great opportunity to evangelize in the Defence Force, and I'll tell you why, because there's no other career that I know of where someone who goes on combat, on operations, has to ask themselves three really important questions. The first is, what would I be willing to die for? And the second would be, what am I willing to kill for? And the third would be, if I was to die now, what's going to happen to me? And, you know, I've found talking to people, that's a great way to say, you know, if that's not of a spiritual concern, what is? And it's very hard for them at that point of time to dodge and say, look, I've got nothing to do with God, and that's just a separate part of my life I can keep to the side, because when you're out there on the two-way rifle range, it's got everything to do with your life. And it's funny because I've heard people, one of my mates is in the SAS and he's done a lot of deployments, and he said it's really interesting because in barracks, a lot of the guys don't want to have anything to do with the chaplain. As soon as they get overseas, where's the chaplain? And he says it's always the guy who's there first. Now, that doesn't make talking about Jesus easy in defence. A lot of people laugh at Christians. They think they're soft and weak. Sometimes, sadly, Christians promote that image too. You know, often there's opportunity, and there's been some fantastic Christians who have been great role models and good for people to look at, and have really challenged that perception that some have of Christians.
Got a question on marriage. There's a lot of guys here who are married and who are looking to get married. We're taught very early on at Grace Point that as married men, we're to lead our wives. And I find that a very terrifying and difficult thing to do. So I was wondering whether you three could just share from your own marriages how you do that, lead your wives.
You want to start with that one, Stuart?
Over to you.
There are a lot of areas that I think that works its way out. Let me mention two that I think as Christian men we often neglect. And the other guys may well talk about some of the others. But I think two of the areas that we often neglect are firstly romance. I reckon that it's the blokes who ought to be responsible for romance in the marriage. Do you want me to say that again? It's the blokes who ought to be responsible for the romance in the marriage. We used to, in the church I used to pastor, we had something called 60 Seconds with Someone Special that we'd nicked from the footy show originally. And we'd get someone up from the church and we would just have 60 seconds, be about 2 minutes. And I would ask them just quick questions. Most of them were silly ones, but there'd always be a couple that gave them the chance to talk about their faith, to talk about perhaps their hope of heaven. Whenever a married woman I got up to talk to, the question I'd ask her is, what's the most romantic thing your husband's ever done? And in all the years that I asked that question, not once did I get anything useful out of any of them. The closest was one of them. Look, they always began with the words, oh, so-and-so's not the most romantic bloke in the world. Well, yeah, that was pretty obvious. So, but I think that it's an area where Christian men ought to actually man up and take some responsibility. It is important in a marriage. And it doesn't matter how long you've been married, you ought to have romance in the marriage. And I'm not talking about sex, let me say, I'm talking about romance. So I'm talking about that joy in the relationship that is there usually at the beginning of the marriage, but which if you're not careful, you can lose after 10, 15, 20, 30 years of marriage. So I reckon bloke's headship, part of it is taking responsibility for the romance. So thinking about what your wife likes to do and doing it, whether you like it or not, and enjoying it, whether you do or not. So that's what you've got to do. So I think that's the first area. I think the second area is spiritual conversation. Sometimes blokes will come to me and they'll say, oh, you know, I'm trying to read the Bible with my wife and it feels really awkward and you know, what they're doing is they're sitting down doing a one-on-one Bible study with their wife. And I say, why are you doing that? And they say, oh, I think I should because I'm the head of the family. And I say, is that something that you did before you got married? Oh, no. I said, is it something that you do with anybody else? Oh, no. I say, well, maybe you need to do that, but you need to think about a more natural way of doing that, rather than feeling like you've got to run sort of everything from Two Ways to Live through a Matthias Bible study with your wife, because that's your job. So thinking about spiritual conversation, I think, is a really natural way. And by that I mean talking about what it means to you to be a follower of the Lord Jesus Christ. Talking about what you've learned when you've read the scriptures that morning. And doing it in a way so that it just naturally comes out, not in a way of, oh, gee, here he goes again. He's obviously got something he wants to say to me. But doing it because that is what you're used to doing. So if you're doing it with other people at church, you'll be doing it with your wife at home. So I just think talking about what it means to you to be a follower of Jesus and what it means to you when you've read the scriptures today, that's where you give spiritual direction. You're modelling, whether your wife does it back to you or not, eventually she will, because you will have made yourself vulnerable, you'll have modelled what it means to talk freely and openly about the things of Christ. And in the process, that will be natural and respectful encouragement of your wife to actually be a serious follower of the Lord Jesus. The third one's prayer, but those two, often we know to pray, but it's the other two.
I'm just trying to get the footy show and romance out of the same sentence. No, I think that's very helpful. In fact, I can say that being at SMBC has been great, because my wife actually studies part-time and she gets to do one course with me. And this has provided a fantastic opportunity for us to have chats. And we sit down and we talk at night, and we talk about what we heard and what we think and how it's impacted our lives. And I realised that I really love this more than I thought I would. And my wife really loves this too. This is what her language of love is, quality time. So it's good for me to learn to be vulnerable with my wife, to tell her I didn't like hearing this today. And she'll say, why? And I'll have to tell her. And she might challenge me. And it's good for me to be asking her what she thought and to be considerate of her. It's a great joy to do something like that together and then to pray together. We've really enjoyed that. I think that's probably all I could say.
I think the most important thing about headship is loving the way Christ loves. And that is really means laying down your life. And I think being a husband means dying every day to yourself and being willing to say, okay, what does my wife need today, and what's that going to cost me? And it can be very, very practical. I've got small kids. Thankfully, they're getting bigger. But one thing about small kids is that they make the house chaos, okay? I think you have as many children as you can cope with chaos, right? People who can't cope with chaos have one kid. People who can cope with a bit more chaos have two. We have three, and my brother has four. His house is complete chaos. And when you get home from work or wherever you've been, the natural temptation, I get home from a day at work, and what I really want to do is just sit down and put my feet up and kick my shoes off and go, awesome. But I learned, having small kids, that I can't do that. What I need to do is, as I walk in the gate, I take a deep breath. Here we go. And then it starts. You walk in that door, the house is chaos, the kids are... It's that time of day when things are falling off the walls, and you just... That is loving your wife. That is, you know, embracing that moment and giving her a kiss and praising her for keeping the children alive and doing everything that you can until they get into bed to show your wife that you love her. I think that is leadership. That is laying down your life the way that Christ laid his life down for his wife. For his church, and that's the picture. I think the other thing is being dogged in communication when there are struggles. So I think blokes aren't always good at communication. Sometimes we would rather just not talk about it. But I think as we are responsible to make sure that stuff gets resolved, and that means... continuing to have the conversation even when it feels like you're not making a whole lot of progress. But keep asking, you know, and it can be a real simple question like, are we okay? That's often how those difficult conversations start. You know, are we all right? Are you okay? Do we need to talk about something? What's going on? And you know, being patient when, you know, it doesn't come quickly. Or your wife says something like, well, you should know what's wrong. I don't know what's wrong, which is why I asked you what's wrong, you know. But persevering in those conversations and making sure that you always work towards reconciliation and coming and working through those problems and being able to pray together and yeah, love Christ together. So, yeah, they'd be two things.
Hi. I know this is a men's talk, but everyone in my office is a woman, apart from me. And to be honest, it's quite hard to have intimate fellowship with another older woman at your workplace. How is it different having fellowship, godly fellowship with a woman as opposed to a man in your workplace? Is there a different approach to take? Is it possible?
I think it is different, and I think you've got to be more careful. Whoever the woman is, I think you've got to be more careful. You've got to remember she's a woman, not a bloke. So I think you can have fellowship if they're another Christian, but I think you've got to be very careful that what starts out at fellowship doesn't actually then tip over into an intimacy that may not in the first instance be inappropriate per se, but which is actually on the pathway towards being inappropriate because it's a level of intimacy that engages your heart and your mind in a way that is inappropriate. Now, it's different if you're looking at dating them and eventually marrying them. That's fine. I'm not talking about that. But in the normal course of events, I think you've got to be very careful. So there will be a sense in which you will not enjoy the same level of fellowship with a woman as you do with another bloke. You're not going to be able to relax as much. You've got to constantly keep watching over your heart and your mind to make sure that you're acting in a godly and appropriate way towards her. And it is better to err on the side of caution than to go even that far into the area of risk. So live well back, and if that causes offence, it can't be helped. That's, I think, a necessary precaution that you have to take.
I guess going back to what the question from marriage, onto parenting, I guess I'm a father of a daughter and a son. And I guess something that my wife says to me, even though they're young, that I'm probably a better father to my son. I guess the question is, what does my daughter need from a Christian father?
Well, you've raised two to marriage, Stuart. I think you should. Mine are only 8 and 6.
I think it is often easier with boys because you've got, there's a whole pile of stuff that you share. The way they play trains is different to the way girls play trains, I think. So my daughters, they're the older, they both grew up with a train set. And when my son was born and started playing with trains, I realised he played with trains like I played with trains. But it's different to the way girls play with trains. I don't know if that sounds sexist or not, but it's true. So it is different. I think that it is more than possible to have the same level of relationship with your daughter as it is with your son. It may just look a bit different, obviously, but it's the same level. In terms of principles, I think the biggest thing is for you to be willing to engage with and to own whatever it is that is of interest to your daughter. I developed a fascination with Barbie dolls at one stage in my life, and it was all because one of my daughters loved Barbie dolls. So if I'm going to wander around because I've got a certain view about Barbie dolls and it's not a positive view, if I'm going to wander around and say I can't engage with her at that, why don't you come out and kick the footy with me? That it's my problem to engage with her. It's not her problem to engage with me. So I think it's finding out the things that are interest. And a lot of that is time, and a lot of that is listening and allowing them to talk. Our children, I think, give us the most remarkable gift. It's a tremendous privilege, and that is that they actually want us to engage with them. That is a remarkable thing when they are young. That is what they want more than anything. So giving ourselves to them in that, I think, is the key. So listening, trying to understand, and then learning how you engage with them. Even if it means that you think there are parts of her life that I will try to engage with, but I'm not going to do as good a job as my wife will, but this is an area that I can. And because it's an area, that's the area that I'm going to try and connect with her in. You will find, I think, that your daughter, when she realises that that's the area you want to engage with her, if it's one of her areas, she will make that a really important part of her life just because it'll give her the chance to spend time with you. And I think both my girls did that. There are a whole range of areas of interest that I developed because they had them, but they gave it back because when they knew that I was interested in them, they made sure that that was important in their life. So it's a two-way thing. But I think that's the best thing that we can do is listen and be prepared to change and be flexible to make ourselves different to who we normally are just because that's important for our daughters.
I could only add quickly and say that spending time with your kids is so important, and often you feel like this is achieving nothing. I'm sitting down, you know, with crayons just drawing rubbish on this bit of paper and there's a huge mess to clean up. In one sense, that's true. But, you know, this is what they love doing. Spend time with them and sit down and watch a movie with them. If it's, you know, the 12 Barbies or something junky like that, which my daughter's into at the moment, I watch it with her. She loves the fact that I'm there with her. And it means a lot. And not only do I spend time with all of my kids and we try and do something special every weekend, I try and spend time with each one of them as well and just on their own. They need time builds trust, builds a relationship, learn who they are. They're real people. They've got real needs. Find their language of love too.
Can you, how about we thank these three gentlemen?